Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Chase McCabe on his way down to Bridgestone Arena to do the midday show, 10 to 2. Darren Donick and Chase alongside Darren McFarland from day four of on-ice practice, as the Nashville Predators get ready to head to Edmonton on July 26th. Hopefully, when they get there, they can use Rogers Place, which was damaged yesterday afternoon by some storms, some wicked storms that blew through Edmonton yesterday. So the arena and the Edmonton Oilers came out yesterday evening and said that they are still confident that the NHL can have their return to play games and exhibition games inside Rogers Place as scheduled, but hopefully all goes well up there in Edmonton. It would be just like 2020 for the NHL to go through all of this and have everything set with one hub city in Edmonton and another in Toronto, and then we hear next week that they can't use the arena because of a storm at Edmonton. I didn't even know it stormed at Edmonton.
Well, see, I didn't even want to talk about it because it's just disappointing to even mention it. So I just was going to kind of gloss over it a little bit, because every time like a player tests positive, when you hear Zion leaving the bubble, which we'll talk about later, when you hear that the arena in Edmonton is you know, had a storm and it affected it a little bit, it just makes you more and more nervous. So I just try to block it off. I'm like, look, let's focus on, I'm watching player practice videos, I'm watching the Preds live stream of them practicing. I want to focus on those positives,
right?
Not Edmonton's arena. It breaks more.
And not the video that emerged on Twitter last night of the damage in one of the front lobbies of Rogers Place.
I will block anybody who tweets that video. I will block whoever tweets that video, just because. I tweet out Preds live stream practice. Tweet out practice from like the Rockets in the bubble. Tweet that stuff out, because it gives me, you know, hope that their sport's going to happen.
I mean, wouldn't it be so 2020? Especially if they went through all of the protocols correctly, if all the NHL teams that are supposed to play in Edmonton, all 12 teams, that they get up there, and then it would just be so 2020 if they get up there and then they discover the arena was unplayable for whatever reason. But they do sound confident that it's going to go on without a hitch.
Well, that's a positive.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Because I heard baseball this morning, they're going to play in AAA fields.
And single A.
Single A.
Fredericksburg, Virginia. That was the rumor, but Ken Rosenthal did come out and confirm.
I heard Jeff Passan talking about it this morning. I'm like, come on, man. You can't be serious. Like,
I know.
Don't tease me like that. Don't scare me like this,
I know.
Man.
Joel Sherman of the New York Post yesterday tweeted out that opener between the Yankees and the Nationals was in doubt, because I believe there was a rule in DC that if you come across anybody that had COVID, you have to quarantine for 14 days. That is now a law in DC. But Nationals Yankees is cleared to go, according to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. That series will go on as scheduled, and you can hear that opening night game between the Yankees and Nationals on 102.5 The Game next Thursday night.
Not in Frederick.
Not live from Fredericksburg,
okay,
Virginia.
Thank you.
But live from the nation's capital. We'll be checking in with Chase McCabe later on in the show from Bridgestone Arena as the Preds get ready for day four of practice. But I do want to share some of the reactions yesterday to the Derrick Henry news that emerged Wednesday afternoon, where Derrick Henry signed the four-year, $50 million contract, $25.5 million guaranteed to stay in two-tone blue beyond just the 2020 season. And it was pretty unexpected Wednesday afternoon, because if you remember Tuesday morning, Adam Schefter tweeted out that it was unlikely that the two sides were going to reach a deal before the 3 p.m. deadline on Wednesday. Marquise, you and I, Tuesday and Wednesday, we sat here basically assuming that if Adam Schefter put that out, it must be true. It's not going to happen. And then, lo and behold, at 2 o'clock Wednesday, 1 hour before the deadline, both Ian Rapoport and Adam Schefter put it out there that they were headed in the right direction to come to a deal. And it's like, what happened to that report 32 hours ago?
Yeah, see, that, I know we jumped the. Well, I mean, we jumped the gun on that, and this is why I miss Woj, because I trust Woj. Woj will never let me down on these things.
But Schefter's percentage of getting news items correct is a very high percentage. It's got to be in the 90s. But it's got to be in the 90s.
It had to been after these reports got out. You know, Jimmy Sexton and somebody had to just been like, look, this is getting ridiculous. Like, we got to get a deal done. Like, we have to make this happen. Like, Henry, we're going to try to make this happen. And obviously, you know, J-Rob said it happened at the kind of the last minute. So that lets me know that, you know, when those reports started to get out there, that Jimmy Sexton got on that phone and was like, hey, we got to get a deal done.
Right.
You know, all these running backs that are going to be free agents next year, all this draft class, like we want to try to avoid that pandemic, everything. So we have to get this deal done now. So, and that's what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of John Robinson, J-Rob was on ESPN's NFL Live yesterday afternoon and commented on what went down in those final couple hours before the deal was signed, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah, I would say last 2 minutes. We got it in right at the buzzer. There was obviously some back and forth with, you know, between myself and Jimmy Sexton, his agent. You know, it's been going on for a while now. It really started to pick up steam, I would say, on the 14th or around lunchtime, and then yesterday morning, and then it culminated there in the last, I would say, hour and 15 minutes or so, where that, you know, it's, can we do this? Can we do that? And trying to massage it so that, you know, we felt good about it as a team, but Derek felt good about the commitment as well. And there were a couple of tense moments back and forth, making sure we've got, you know, things scanned and things signed and sent back to the league office. I double checked with the league office twice that we were good, that the deal was done, but just happy for him and happy for our organization that we're able to get that thing finalized.
John Robinson yesterday on ESPN's NFL Live. He will appear on Jared and the GM this afternoon at 3:00. Just got that confirmation here in the last handful of minutes. So John Robinson yesterday saying that they beat the buzzer, essentially, to get that deal done for Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry yesterday said that he agreed to a deal, you know, a couple hours before the deadline, but the point is, there in that 2 hour window, that's when everything culminated and, you know, everything was signed off on.
We have to start using that deadline like a little bit more, because we jumped the gun so quick of like, okay, it's a day before the 3:00 Central Time. And they're saying a deal's not going to get done. So, okay, deal's not going to get done. Let's just throw our hands up and say, but it's, let's do that like at like 3:01. Or 3:02. Let's react then that a deal didn't get done. This is like a learning lesson for all of us.
I think
not
so.
Not to overreact.
I think so. But again, when Adam Schefter puts it out there, you just trust that when he puts it out there, it's fact. So
I don't know what's real news anymore now.
Exactly.
I just don't know what's real reports now.
It's 2020.
I know.
Speaking of reactions from across the nation, yesterday, Colin Cowherd hit the airwaves for the first time since that deal got done. And this is Colin Cowherd saying that he likes Henry, but maybe not as much as some of the other running backs in the league.
I like Derrick Henry, and I think he really aligns with what Tennessee is trying to do. It's a physical football team. That's Mike Vrabel's DNA, and I think Derrick Henry fits them, and I'm glad he's there. But here's the actual truth on Derrick Henry. He was close to a middle second-round pick. He was only really the guy at Alabama for 1 year. He didn't start for the Titans for the first 2 years. By the third year, he was splitting time early, and he can't catch the ball much. He's not really a threat to catch the ball. Zeke in Dallas, McCaffrey with Carolina, and Saquon Barkley were all top 8 picks. They were better NFL prospects. They're all significantly better catchers of the football out of the backfield in an increasingly passing league. They're better players. They are. And they're better prospects, and they should be paid higher, and they all are.
That was Colin Cowherd yesterday, and I'm glad he ended that clip by actually acknowledging that the Titans didn't make Derrick Henry the highest paid back in the league. And he was essentially reacting to the news like Derrick Henry got a contract that was the highest paid running back in the league. And I don't really understand his point of, he only had one big year at Alabama and he didn't start for the Titans until year 3. That's why I feel confident that you can give Derrick Henry the contract that he got and he's still going to be good within that contract.
I just don't get what college. What you did in college. Oh, Christian McCaffrey and you know, Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott, they were top prospects. There's a lot of top prospects that go into the NFL draft and don't amount to anything.
Right.
So that's hit or miss. Like, yeah, Derrick Henry won a Heisman, got drafted in the second round, but, like, who cares where you get drafted? We've seen that over years past. One of the best quarterbacks in the league got drafted in the sixth round. Right. So I don't get that logic at all.
Especially with running backs. They're getting drafted later and later and later now in NFL drafts because teams know that you can get a good running back or at least a serviceable one in the middle rounds.
Yeah, like Le'Veon Bell, for example, who got big money with the Jets. He got drafted in the second round, too. So what difference does that make?
Yeah, I just don't understand what road Colin Cowherd was going down.
I want to react to this, but it's just like I can't because it's like there's no logic within what he said about, well, he played 1 year at Alabama where he – I'm like, yeah, guess what? A lot of running backs play 1 or 2 years, and guess what? That 1 year was – pretty good.
Yes, he won the Heisman Trophy in that 1 year.
Second player in Alabama history to win a Heisman. Second running back, obviously, with Mark Ingram. So, I get it because it's always the same narrative with Derrick Henry. You know, he ran the ball a lot at Alabama. Then that story starts. You know, he had a slow start to his NFL career, which a lot of guys do. They have slow starts. But guess what? The last two seasons, he picked it up. This is not like a Josh Norman with the Carolina Panthers situation where Josh Norman played like one good year with the Panthers. And he was like, all right, man, it's time to pay me now. You know, we were 15-1 in the regular season. And, you know, I should be the highest paid corner now because I had this one good year. This is 2 years of Derrick Henry being one of the top running backs in the league. So pay him accordingly to that. This is not the same situation. And it's not like he came out, and I think people are still going back to that Rich Eisen interview where he said, you know, Zeke is the ceiling. It's not that he wants to be the highest paid back. He just wants to be paid what he's owed. And and what he's owed is to be a top five back because guess what? Statistics show that that's what he's been this year.
Right, exactly. So that was Colin Cowherd's reaction. And now sticking with FS1 on First Things First, Nick Wright had an even harsher take on Derrick Henry and the Titans.
But the Titans signing Derrick Henry to a 4-year, $50 million deal is why Nick Wright, myself, should be a general manager in the NFL. This is so dumb. And it is why certain teams are just stuck on the treadmill. It's nothing against Derrick Henry. But the Titans, their two best offensive players, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry. The whole world said, buyer beware on giving Tannehill $92 million guaranteed as you did $30 million a year. Their justification was, well, we can't franchise him because we have to franchise the running back because you don't want to pay the running back a bunch of money. So they give Tannehill 3 years basically fully guaranteed at $30 million per. It's going to kill him. So they can franchise Derrick Henry. And then the last minute, they're like, yeah, we don't even need to franchise Derrick Henry. The hell are you doing? Like, what are you doing? You're in the AFC Championship game. It's so bad. And by the way, a third of the GMs in the league looked at this and was like, good move. Yeah, bell cow running back, 3 yards. It's so dumb. And I don't understand how this league hasn't evolved.
I don't even know what to say to that. Nick Wright on FS1 reacting.
This is why I watch Get Up in the Morning.
To Derrick Henry.
look.
He didn't really explain why it was dumb. He just kept saying it was dumb.
I guess his logic is they should have used the franchise on Tannehill first and then paid Henry. Maybe that's his logic in it. They should have franchised Tannehill and then paid Henry the money, which, I mean, that would have been a little bit more logical. But, I mean, you want to keep your, like, yeah, they went to an AFC championship, but guess what? That's what they're trying to go back to. So you want to keep the same core group of players that you had last year. And who are the two key pieces to that playoff run? Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. And guess what? You got both of them back. So I don't see what the big problem is having two guys who helped you get into the AFC championship game, having them back on larger contracts. I just don't.
You know what situations like this really do to the national media? Because not only did I just shake my head there with what Nick Wright had to say, and kind of with Colin Cowherd. But, you know, I believe it was Wednesday night, I was listening to Spain and Company. You can listen to Sarah Spain, and Wednesday night it was Jordan Cornette. You can listen to them on ESPN Radio. And Sarah Spain was acting like the stats that Tannehill had in the playoffs were the norm for Tannehill in a Titans uniform. And the point I'm getting at is that when the Titans become the breaking news in the National Football League, these national media members get exposed because they don't watch the Titans. They spend zero time watching the Titans, and the only time they watched the Titans was when Ryan Tannehill completed two passes en route to them beating the Patriots and the Ravens, and Derrick Henry was the biggest reason why they got to the AFC Championship game. They didn't really pay attention to Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown and that entire Titans offense just going crazy in the second half of the season and putting up unreal numbers. They didn't even watch the Titans at that point. They only watched the Titans in the playoffs when Tannehill completed two passes per game.
You know what I call those? Box score reporters. That's pretty much what they are. They're box score reporters. They look at box scores, and then they get their analysis from that. And you can't do that because, look, there was games that Tannehill was the reason why, you know, the Tennessee Titans made the playoffs. There are plenty of games that were like that, especially when you look at the Chiefs game that was close. You look at that Chargers game that, you know, a lot of the defense played a part in that as well. But it's, look, this is a team game. And this is very cliche to say, but, you know, the Ravens won a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer. And this is no knocking Trent Dilfer, but, you know, they had a run game. They had a defense that they had to back up. It's a full team game. So if Tannehill throws 85 yards and they still win the game, guess what? That means other pieces were doing their job well. So I just, Tannehill got his money. He earned it. When he's healthy, he's even proved it in Miami. He's a pretty good quarterback. And Derrick Henry proved it in his last 2 years. So I don't see what the big deal is. And I'm glad we have to play that because, you know, it shows me that there's media people that just still don't get it. And it's fine. Like, if you want to keep, you know, your chances of going back to that championship game, why not keep the pieces that brought you to the dance? Like, I don't get that logic. Like, and that's the reason why Nick Foles got paid with the Eagles, because quite frankly he won them a Super Bowl. So why not keep them?
Tannehill, Henry, AJ Brown, they're all going to be together for the next 3 years. So, and most of that offensive line. So this offense is here to stay. Yeah. You would think. So
the only thing they haven't replaced is defensive end, and that's it.
And I'm glad you went down that road, Marquise Munson, because yesterday Derrick Henry commented on Jadeveon Clowney. You'll hear those comments coming up next year on The Rundown. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Marquise Munson on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You guys have the fifth most salary cap space in the league here. So are you still exploring adding maybe a potential edge rusher, like a veteran out on the market, like Jadeveon Clowney?
We're constantly exploring, you know, the players that are on the market, players that can, you know, come in here and help our football team, while also trying to, especially in today's world with, you know, with the pandemic and, you know, the uncertainty that looms for the 2021 season and the 2022 season, with salary cap. So trying to exercise some internal discipline that way, yet also trying to do everything we can to make sure we put a team out there that has a chance to make a run at this thing.
Have you guys had an opportunity to talk to Clowney's people in the last week or so to maybe see if this could be something you would explore and maybe make happen?
We may or may not have had conversations. I'll leave it at that.
John Robinson, Titans GM, yesterday on NFL Live on ESPN, talking Jadeveon Clowney with Diana Russini, and that response is what you would expect out of the GM of the Tennessee Titans when asked about a free agent on the market that they have not signed yet. That is exactly what you would expect from John Robinson. And by the way, John Robinson, 3 o'clock today, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Jared and the GM. Now, John Robinson wasn't the only Titans member who was asked about Jadeveon Clowney yesterday. Derrick Henry had his press conference via Zoom And when asked about his contract and how he's doing, Derrick Henry did a lot of deflecting. He didn't really want to talk about himself or the contract. He was just glad that it got done. But when he was asked by Jared Stillman about Jadeveon Clowney, Derrick Henry opened up a little bit and shared some candid thoughts on it, whether or not he wants the Titans to go after Clowney.
Well, I've heard things. Played against Jadeveon when he was in Houston. He's a great player. He's a furious player. He's been playing at a high level, you know, in this league for a while. And he wants to come to Tennessee. We definitely would welcome him and, with open arms. And you know, hopefully, you know, if they are talking, we can get something done, and you know, he can come join us. And because we definitely would, you know, love to have him, and he can help us in a big way.
That was not Jadeveon Clowney. That was Derrick Henry yesterday on Jadeveon Clowney, saying that they would welcome him with open arms. A lot more candid of a comment there from Derrick Henry than it was with John Robinson, as you would expect. And Marquise, every time I hear one of the Titans players talk about Clowney or tweet about Clowney, the resolution I keep coming to is that, isn't it going to happen? Like, the more they talk about it, if it wasn't going to happen and he was just a free agent out there and the Titans weren't as rumored as they are for Jadeveon Clowney, I kind of feel like they would just have some stock answer, move on, and not go to the depth that Derrick Henry just went like that of saying we would welcome him with open arms. He would be a good fit on this team. You know, Taylor Lewan has tweeted at Clowney. I mean, there's a lot out there when you also factor in Mike Vrabel's experience with Jadeveon Clowney. Everything is just adding up for it to at some point happen, whether it's next week, whether it's a month from now, what have you. That's at least my thought. Every single time that I hear a member of the Titans not named John Robinson talk about Clowney.
Yeah, I see your point, but I also look at it as, if you're going to ask me about Clowney, what else do you want me to say? Am I supposed to say it?
He could have stopped at he's a good player. He's been a good player for a long time, and hopefully something can work out. But Derrick Henry went that extra mile of, we would welcome him with open arms, that he would be a great fit on this team. We have heard multiple Titans come out and say that in the last couple months.
Yeah, and the Titans, to me, are the most actively at trying to recruit Clowney. Like, I don't see any other player. I don't see, like, Myles Garrett, like, tweeting that he would love to play with Clowney with the Browns. Or I don't see anybody with the Eagles doing that as well. And the Titans
have been... Or Seattle.
I don't see anybody, you know, especially Seattle, is a team he left. I don't see Russell Wilson's we got to bring our guy back.
Right, plus they gave his number away to Jaren Reed.
Exactly.
Reed gave up 90 for Clowney and now is going back to 90. He tweeted that out a couple months ago.
Yeah, so it seems like all signs are pointing to Jadeveon Clowney, because I feel like the Titans will be, at this point, either the Titans or the Eagles are going to be his only option. And I think it's going to come down to those two teams. So, look, the Titans are doing a good job at recruiting, because that's one big thing about free agency is recruiting. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that before Odell Beckham went to the Browns, I'm pretty sure Jarvis Landry was in his ear, was also in the team's ear of, hey, we need to get my boy here in Cleveland. You know, we got something going on with me, Baker, but if you add, you know, my LSU brother and Odell Beckham, I think we can do some damage in that offense, which they didn't so far. But, that's the part of the NFL. It's like, we're recruiting players. And look, I just don't want... Like, we're talking about Clowney so much, I just don't want the disappointment on when Clowney doesn't get here.
Well, that leads me to the next thing, is what happens if he doesn't sign here?
Yeah.
Do they address the D-line with the cap space? Look, Derrick Henry's cap hit for 2020 is only $6 million, which is a total steal for the defending rushing champ, even though you just signed him to a four-year deal. A $6 million cap hit in 2020 for Derrick Henry. So you have cap space upwards of $20 million to go out and do something. You don't have to spend it all. You do have to sign your rookies within that cap space. But if you don't sign Clowney, what are you going to do? Are you going to spend that cap space on a veteran quarterback to back up Ryan Tannehill so that Logan Woodside isn't your backup quarterback like he shouldn't be? Is, you know, is Steven Goskowski going to come here and be the kicker? I mean, Goskowski just purchased a house in Franklin, Tennessee. Now, a lot of athletes like living in Franklin, Tennessee or in the Middle Tennessee area, but when that emerged here in the last few days, a lot of people were trying to add that to, okay, are they going to sign Goskowski and not go with Greg Joseph as their kicker? You could probably still get Goskowski and sign Clowney and sign all your rookies and your draft class and fit it all within the salary cap and be ready for that week one. Now, the veteran quarterback is the tricky part, because some of those veteran backup quarterbacks are going to cost you $5-6 million, maybe even $7 or $8 million. But at this point, if you're a veteran backup quarterback out there on the market, wouldn't you just take almost any deal that comes your way just so that, A, you get the money when it's not a 100% guarantee that you're going to start and finish the season?
Yeah, so I'm going to throw this one at you because, you know, you follow the Titans you're pretty much half of your life, and, you know, I'm a Raider fan, so I'll ask you this at how you would feel. Let's say that they don't sign Clowney, and everybody's all excited, up in arms, that, you know, Clowney is the sexy name, obviously, and when it comes to D linemen. But what if you sign Everson Griffin for cheap? For cheaper than Clowney. Clowney's maybe 15 mil. Maybe you get Griffin for maybe 12. And, you know, Griffin's 32 years old, and obviously you want to prepare for the future also while signing a D lineman. But you sign Everson Griffin for less money, and then you have enough money to either sign a kicker or sign a veteran quarterback. Because let's face it, Jameis Winston signed with the Saints for, you know, cheap. So I'm pretty sure if you can get Jameis Winston for, you know, $3-4 million, you can probably get another veteran quarterback for that same price. Cheap, you know? So get Griffin or, you know, add him with a veteran quarterback or a kicker. How would you feel about that?
Look, Everson Griffin has been solid throughout his career. He also has baggage. Everson Griffin has a lot of baggage to him. And I would rather have, like, Marcus Golden. I'd rather have him than Everson Griffin, if I'm being completely honest. Now, I would take Everson Griffin cheaper than $12 million. Everson Griffin out there right now, if he doesn't have a contract and someone goes to him, let's say John Robinson says, here's $6 or $7 million for 2020, I don't know how he can pass that up. So would I accept that? Sure. But Clowney is a bigger difference maker. In the end, a bigger difference maker than Griffin. And if you can make it work with the cap space to get Clowney and maybe a veteran quarterback to back up Ryan Tannehill and not Logan Woodside and get your rookies all signed, I would absolutely do that. And if you still have space, you don't have to spend it all, but if you still have space, I would still like to see a better fourth receiver than Khalif Raymond on this team.
Yeah, because I was wondering if you would see Griffin, like, we traded away Casey, so why are we signing Griffin? Like, it wouldn't make, you know, logical sense, because, I mean, you know, Casey's a little bit more of a difference maker than Griffin is.
Yeah.
Even. So I know, think a lot of fans will be up in arms because it would be Griffin, but you get him for cheap.
Right. Well, I mean, Everson Griffin is a, you know, obviously plays a different position on the D line. I mean, he's more of a 4-3 D end. Jarrell Casey is more of either a 3-4 D end or a 4-3 defensive tackle. So he'd be filling a different need. Clowney, you would think, would be hand in the dirt 4-3 D end in Mike Vrabel's scheme, now that he's essentially taken over for Dean Pease. So
I'm just trying to save some Titans some money, man. I'm trying to save him some money because they do need a kicker and they also need a veteran quarterback.
Well,
so you're having to fit Clowney into this $14 million range, and then you also have two other needs that you need to fill, and you also have rookies that you need to sign.
See how I would respond to that before we move on to Zion is, I would go get Clowney and make it work with the rest of the cap space that you have. Get the best free agent out there left, unsigned, and then just make it work with the rest of your cap space. And whether that means you have a lesser fourth receiver, a lesser veteran backup quarterback to Ryan Tannehill, just so that you can get Clowney, I would probably take that. Coming up next, Zion has left the bubble. What does that mean for all the bubbles? That's coming up next on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the show. It's The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. Chase McCabe will be coming up here later on in the hour, live from Bridgestone Arena. Nice Foo Fighters coming back here on this Friday morning, TGIF. Now, shifting into the bubble or the secure zone or the campus, whatever you want to call
when
it
we
with,
talk NBA,
with these bubbles.
We got to say campus.
Okay, so the NBA campus.
Disrespect.
Yes, the NBA campus down in Orlando. There's been a lot of campus news this week. First of all, a player left to go get whatever food it was. He crossed the border of the bubble to get food, and now he has to quarantine 10 days, player with the Sacramento Kings. And now Zion Williamson is leaving the bubble, but Zion Williamson is leaving the bubble due to an urgent family medical matter. He intends to rejoin the team at a later date. Hopefully everything within his family is going to be fine, but obviously that's always – always scary to hear that a player has an urgent family medical matter. So hope all is well on that front. But he's leaving the bubble. I didn't know that they could do this before yesterday. Marquise Munson behind the glass. You've got the statement from the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, so Zion Williamson departed Orlando this morning, which was yesterday, to attend a urgent family medical matter. He intends to rejoin the team in Orlando for the NBA restart at a later date. And then this is a quote from David Griffin, who is the vice president of basketball operations for the Pelicans. And he said, "We fully support Zion's decision to leave the NBA campus to be with his family. And out of respect for Williamson's family, we will have no further comment at this time." So it's obviously it's a serious matter if it means that he has to leave the bubble to go attend to it. So, and obviously, you know, when we talk about these things of, you know, players being gone from their families for, you know, 3 or 4 months, and, you know, if they have to leave the bubble for these urgent, you know, issues, then, you know, we just kind of have to let them do it. And now the question is, what's going to happen when he comes back? And that's going to be the biggest question.
Right. So reading from ESPN.com, their story on Zion Williamson, saying that, quote, "If his absence lasts 7 days or fewer, Zion will quarantine for 4 days upon his return to the NBA bubble or campus if he has a negative test each day he's outside the bubble. If Zion is gone longer than a week, he will still quarantine for 4 days if he has a negative test for the final 7 days he is gone. If he doesn't have the required testing, he will quarantine for 10 days. So that is straight from ESPN.com. All of that makes perfect sense. Now, New Orleans, their first game is Thursday, July 30th. So 2 weeks from yesterday, he left the bubble yesterday. So I kind of think that is very 50-50 whether or not he's going to play in that game, depending on how long, obviously, he's outside the bubble and whether or not he's getting the required testing
when he's
not in Orlando.
It's better than what I initially thought it was going to be, because when I heard it yesterday and we didn't have that information of like what the protocols was going to be, I assumed that, you know, obviously if a player even steps over a line to go get some food and he has to quarantine for 10 days, obviously if you leave the bubble, I thought that, hey, he may have to quarantine for 10 days then because he left the bubble. Same thing that, you know, Rashawn Holmes did when he tried to get food. So apparently he's going to, you know, I thought he would have to miss 10 days. So it's good that it's only 4 days. And, you know, I'm not going to get into conspiracy theories if it's only 4 days because they want Zion to play basketball. I'm not going to get into those conspiracy theories about Zion and the NBA campus and bubble or whatever.
I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah, they're definitely out there. Oh, the reason why they got an easy schedule is because they want to see Zion versus LeBron James in the first round. Yeah, I get all that. But I think it's good. Look, if the Pelicans miss him for one game, I think they'll be fine because, you know, they still got Brandon Ingram. He's been good this year. Lonzo Ball's been good this year as well. And you also got Jrue Holiday, who's, you know, one of their star guards. So I think even without him, and, you know, I think they'll be fine. They got Derek Favors to kind of fill that gap for him. Of course, Derek Favors is not Zion Williamson, but, you know, they definitely got pieces. As long as, you know, during this time that they don't have other players test positive or whatever and lose roster spots, but, you know, I think they'll be fine. I don't think this is an overreaction of Zion is out of the bubbles, which means what does that mean for the Pelicans? Does that mean they're going to compete with the Grizzlies? I'm not going to get into that because I think he misses one game, possibly maybe two at the most, and he'll be back on the court. And then, you know, they'll have six games left to kind of get back into that eight seed. So,
sure,
you know, I'm not going to overreact. I just want his family to be safe. And that's the most important thing. Yeah, it's cool if we see him in the playoffs, but we want to make sure his family is good.
For sure. That is by far the most important thing from an NBA standpoint, just from strictly that angle. I really hope he's back by August 3rd, because August 3rd is when they take on the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant versus Zion Williamson.
Like I said, at most two games, so it'll be
that's
good.
That's the third game back.
Yeah, it'll be fitting if he comes back and it's that game. And they need that game because, like, the Memphis Grizzlies have the hardest schedule, the Pelicans have the easiest schedule. So it's a mashup of that. And Adam Vinyan beat me in our series. We had a series going on with the Pelicans versus the Grizzlies, and he beat me in game seven. So unfortunately. I lost because of Ja.
Condolences.
So I hate losing. I was mad because I lost game six because of a lagging issue.
Oh, no.
And I was mad, and I wanted to play him like right away. I said, I want game seven now, and I had to wait a whole day to get my game seven. Well, so
did you even have lag issues in game seven?
Yeah, we did.
Issues are the worst in online gaming.
See, this is why I don't play online. Like, I don't play, like, I play my player mode on 2K. I don't play games online because it lags too much and it just frustrates me. And I break too many controllers because they get thrown halfway across the room.
All right. So, in your life, over under 3.5, how many controllers have you broken because you got mad about what was happening in the game?
Over under
3.5.
I'll probably go over because as a kid,
man.
Because as a kid, I would get angry. The Nintendo GameCube controllers, they were easy to break too.
Yeah, those were very easy.
Those were easy to break. I didn't went through at least two Nintendo GameCube controllers.
Do you have an Xbox controller or a PS4?
I have a PS4.
Okay, so those are a lot easier to break than an Xbox controller.
I can say I've broken two Nintendo GameCube controllers. Because I was a kid and I was pretty mad when I would lose at Smash Brothers, so two Nintendo GameCubes, one PlayStation, and maybe like two PlayStation ones that I broke. But this is like I've had every PlayStation from one all the way to now, so it's two PlayStation controllers. So I'll say it's a push. Mm-hmm. It's a push with the over, but still an over. What about you, dude? You don't seem like the type that will throw a controller if you get angry.
I've broken more radio headphones than I have controllers with video games.
Oh, the headsets? The game headsets?
The ones that I'm wearing right now, like personal radio headphones.
Oh yeah, I can.
Yeah. Back in 2014, 2015, my first couple years of working here, I was a perfectionist, and if something didn't go right, I would get really mad at myself. And there were a couple times where I threw my headset across the control room that you are sitting in right now, and I ended up breaking my headphones.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
See, as a gamer, you look like a storm offer. You don't look like a control thrower.
You look like a
storm offer. Like, if you get mad at a play or something, you'll just get up. Both of your arms will be, like, straight down, and you'll just be like...
I'm more of a cursor.
Me too.
Son of a...
This is why, like Adam suggested, he was like, if we go to seven, we should live stream. And I was like, no, that's not a good idea. Because I can't tell you how many times I cussed out Ty Jones, who plays for the Memphis Grizzlies. I can't tell you how many times I cussed out Kyle Anderson. Poor Kyle Anderson. I abused him on that game because I was like, Kyle Anderson, get off the court. It was bad.
Personally, I feel like I'm good at sports video games because I hate to lose. I am so competitive with sports video games, whether it's Madden, whether it's NHL, whether it's MLB The Show. Like, I hate to lose. So I will do everything in my power to win.
Yeah, I couldn't even sleep last night. I was like, I can't believe I lost. Like, I had the lead. Like, I had it, and I lost. Like, I can't believe it. I couldn't even sleep. But, you know, kudos to Adam. He plays a little bit more than I do because I stick to my player mode. And I told Adam, I'm done. Don't text me and ask me if I want to play anymore. I'm done with this game.
Good stuff. Coming up next is Chase McCabe from Bridgestone Arena. We will get into the Nashville Predators as they prepare for day four of training camp from Bridgestone Arena. That's coming up next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, alongside Marquise Munson behind the glass. Hope to be joined here by Chase McCabe here in the next couple of minutes, live from Bridgestone Arena, as the Nashville Predators get ready for day four of training camp. And the first few days of training camp went off without a hitch. Yesterday they had a day off from at least going on the ice. I know they had some team meetings at the arena, and we're now welcomed by Chase McCabe, co-host of this very show. Chase, how are we doing this morning?
I'm feeling good. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. What Marquise and I were commenting last segment on what's the maddest we've ever gotten with video games.
Ooh.
What's the maddest you've ever gotten?
Oh, man. So back in the day when I was in college, I played Halo all the time. Like,
I haven't heard that game in a long time.
Yeah, sometimes I played Halo when I should have been, studying.
that might be why it took me so long. Haven't we all been in that situation?
So, I don't know. Did you play Halo? Did you ever play Halo?
My buddies did. I wasn't a Halo guy. I've always been just a sports Marquise, video game guy.
Are you a PlayStation guy?
Yeah, so I'm a PlayStation. I've never owned an Xbox. So.
Okay. Really?
So, for those of you listening that were into Halo, you remember, you'll know exactly what I'm talking. And it probably happens in Call of Duty and other games like that, too. But campers. So when you're playing multiplayer and you're online and, you know, whether you're on a team or it's a free-for-all, there's always that one guy that he finds an elevator or some place where it's easy for him to just camp out, and then they have the sticky grenades, and all of a sudden you hear that click that the grenade is stuck to you, and you go, oh, blank, and then you blow up and you die. Mm. So I was playing a game of Halo one time, and it was a free-for-all, and I was dominating. Like, I was kicking everybody's rear end. And so I was feeling good because I'm like, I'm going to win this thing. This is going to be great. And I'm like, I'm into it. I'm hardcore. And I'd been playing for hours at that point. And it was me and this other dude that were kind of trading back the high score, and there was 30 seconds left, and I had just sniped a guy, and I had taken the lead, and it looked like I was going to have it. And then this guy that wasn't even, like, in the mix had camped out and hits me with a sticky grenade. Mm. And by the time I respawned, the other guy got another kill, and he won the game. And I chucked my controller across the room. It shatters against the wall. Like, there was a mark. Like, I put a dent in the wall. The nice. Controller just explodes. It was dead. It was gone. The dog goes running up the stairs because he was scared. I was just cussing. So that's probably the maddest I've ever been. Halo will do that to you. At least I didn't put it through the TV because that almost happened.
Wow. Yeah, Marquise Munson, last segment, mentioned how he's thrown a controller. I gave him an over-under of how many controllers he's broken over the years. The over-under was 3.5, and he said it's over. That he's gotten so mad at some games that he's broken his controller more than 3.5 times over the years. I don't think I've ever broken a PS4 or Xbox 360 controller out of being mad about what was happening on the screen.
Yeah, that's the only
I've cursed a lot.
Actually, no. I have broken two.
The maddest I've ever been was a Madden game with Robbie Stanley when we were roommates. and it was a really competitive game of Madden, as you can probably predict between the two of us. And I am still convinced to this day that I got the 2-point conversion because the receiver's 2 feet were down. And they called it no good. They called him out of bounds. And he was in bounds. I am still sold on that to this day. I am not one to go look at the replay and see, like, okay, let's really analyze this on the instant replay, and let's pause the game. Oh, I did that for that one. I 1,000% did that, and I was yelling at the TV that his 2 feet were down. And I even challenged it, and they still said he was out of bounds. And I'm still fired up about it to this day. But
I believe it.
But I hear hockey going on behind you, Chase McCabe, as you are in the radio booth at Bridgestone Arena. What is Michael McCarron, the Hal Gill look-alike out there on the ice? Okay. All right.
Yes,
we've accomplished that. We've accomplished that. So they hit the ice. The full squad hits the ice today at noon. You know, there haven't been a whole lot of surprises, I would say, for the first part of training camp, but it will be interesting to see after a day off what takes place later today.
I think they go after it today. That's what I think. Got a day off yesterday. They've ramped it up the first three practices. I could see John Hines saying, "Okay, you had a day off. We're gonna bring it hard and heavy today." So that's kind of what I think. The rookies are out. I say the rookies. The young guys are out right now. So they're going before practice. I think that you're going to see them really bring it up another notch today. So I'm looking forward to that. There's, you know, Forsberg's look good. The Joe Fulline has looked good. Arvidsson has looked healthy, which I think is really important. Johansson has a little bit of a swagger back. Again, it's hard to take away some of that from practice. But, you know, they're supposed to have a scrimmage. David Poile told us the other day they're having a scrimmage on Sunday. So they're going to start getting into, game-like situations to get them ready for that exhibition game against the Dallas Stars coming up on the 30th. But I look forward to it. I'm watching Ellie Tolvanen work on his shot right now, taking feeds from Rem Pitlick. So that's been cool. You know, those are two guys that probably going to need to pay attention to in the future. And you bring up Hal Gill. He is actually wandering up here right now with Darren McFarland. So Skillsy is in the building.
Well,
they get ready for this.
That's good to know. Out of 10 out or scale of 1 to 10, how is Darren's hair today?
It's an 11, man.
It's 11.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, the spikes are on point. I mean, he's got the faux hawk going.
Nice and
he's
shiny.
Looking good. Yes. I'll tell you who the lettuce on Hal Gill, that's looking good too.
Has he gotten a haircut since his last tweet?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I told him that he should not.
He looks
cut
good.
That
he's
hair.
In shape. He's slimmed down a little bit. Skillsy's the it's been good. Quarantine's been good to Skillsy.
Good deal. Good for Skillsy. I'm glad he has slimmed down during quarantine, because not all of us can say that.
No, we cannot.
I'm kind of speaking from experience there. But coming up here in a few minutes, it will be Darren Donick and Chase live from Bridgestone Arena for day four of Preds training camp on the ice. Chase, good to talk with you. And if I don't talk with you before the end of the day, have a great vacation.
Hey, I appreciate it, my friend. We'll see you when I get back.
Sounds good. That's Chase McCabe live from Bridgestone Arena, where he will be joined by Darren McFarland and maybe even Hal Gill coming up here in the next few minutes here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.